I can't get no relief. Businessman there, the dream.
It's a matter of time, I suppose.
Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we take a look at the 2009 Zack Snyder film Watchmen, one Martian shopping mall flyover at a time. My name is Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes podcast.
I'm Eric Nash.
And I'm Pete the Retailer. Or was that more tonally appropriate?
You're getting more into the Mr. Freeze range, you know, the cold and emotionless and...
Yeah, I was worried I went a little bit Eeyore, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll fix it in post.
Exactly.
We've got Pete joining us again for minute 149, which starts with John showing off Mars to Lori and ends with Lori telling John he's wrong.
I'll save it for the end. Then. I was going to say, jump straight to something from the end, but I'll... I'll back it up. Let's go chronologically.
Okay.
It's the theme of clocks and watches. Mm-hmm. Let's go chronologically. I'd love me some John on Mars. I know we kind of talked about yesterday a little bit of, you know, going through the book each time from the perspective of a different character. But I think John on Mars both times kind of just totally is my favorite setting, my favorite place to be in the whole book.
Yeah. The first time, the origin story and the setup of the Mars stuff earlier is definitely my favorite section of the movie. Just like I said, once it starts with him on Mars and going through his history and all that voiceover stuff, I can't get enough of that.
Yeah. Although, again, it's because it's so... I don't know, because I'm really attached to that particular issue. Even I will often say it's my favorite single issue of comics, probably.
Oh wow!
That I feel so attached to it that there was no way anything was going to live up to it. But I liked it. I liked it fine, but it wasn't. It didn't give me that same wow. Transportation.
Yeah.
I wasn't as engaged. I was like, all right, that's, you know, that looks cool. And I liked seeing some of the things, you know, some of the visual, with the kind of clock ship and the things that they did. It's like, oh, that's cool to see happening. You know, it's cool to see like on the big screen like that, but it didn't kind of bring me to the same place.
Sure.
I don't want to sound like I'm nonstop trashing this movie.
No.
I don't hate it.
No, it's definitely perfectly fine, you know, obviously to have whatever feelings, you know, you have from it's definitely what's the word? It's a polarizing movie, I think.
Well, so I want to try to not be too not be the extreme, you know, the other extreme that it was like, this isn't exactly what I, you know, had in my head, so it's garbage. Like,
sure. Right.
Some things don't quite match up for me, but overall, you know, I respect his passion, obviously, like, you know, he seemed really passionate in making it and wanted to just kind of faithfully represent that. And I think maybe that's part of what didn't work is it was too faithful to the... Too faithful to some of the things without kind of like some of the heart got left out in a sense.
Yeah. You
know, some of that emotion, some of that, like, it was sometimes maybe let's tweak this a little bit just to make it more, you know, make the feeling a little, amp up the feelings a little bit. Let's get something going on here.
Yeah. Versus... I think Scott Carelli had a similar thought about, you know, he was like Zack Snyder was super concerned with getting the minute details and stuff, you know, maybe for fan service, but wasn't as concerned with having a reason for those things to be here or that kind of thing. But obviously paraphrasing what his point was, but
what's my criticism, I mean, at the time, which kind of stands, it's like having the entire book explained to you in detail by a really excited 15-year-old. And he was just, and then this happens, and then this happened. Rorschach killed a dog. And it's like, all right, chill out, dude. And it's like a little bit like, I get it. I get it. And I know you're excited about it. And it sounds really cool. But like, I just didn't, it didn't, I don't know. It wasn't, I don't know. Again, it's not for lack of trying, but it doesn't click the same way that the book does with me. And it's nothing will, because you know it's one of my favorite books of all time. Sure. So it's an impossible thing to live up to.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna take us back to the kind of the first bit in the minute here with John kind of continuing his thought from yesterday about the fact that Mars is a constantly changing topographical map. Flowing and shifting around the pole in ripples 10,000 years wide. I like his use of the 10,000 years wide as a description for physical, you know, this topography. And it's like, I think that he means the ripples themselves, like almost sort of like rings on a tree. Like you can count the, these rings or these ripples or you know, see how long they took for the stuff to form.
Yeah.
It's still such an odd phrase, but I dig it. You know, I think it's easy as he speaks in that measured tone that it's easy to lose like focus on what he's talking about. And then all of a sudden he says 10,000 years wide and it's like, wait, what?
But that seems to have something of a Star Wars connection, though, that has recently been helped to figure out the idea of the parsec and time and distance and so forth being mixed around and played with.
Exactly. There you go.
Oh, is that something they kind of answered? Well,
you haven't seen Solo,
right? I'm yet, a bad right? Star Wars fan right now. That's right. I never got around to it.
You know, it's available now on Blu-ray and digital.
I've heard, you know, I've heard.
I think it also, you know, that's John's way of looking at things here, that, you know, time is not necessarily relevant or linear. So to have it be, you know, to describe physical things using time.
Yeah.
You know, to describe with using time is perfectly that. Yeah, everything is, you know, in flux. It's all just kind of not in flux, but it's all kind of different facets of the same thing. So to look at it on that scale is it's cool. It's good line.
Yeah.
I also like Rates. I guess this is after she, you know, is saying no. You're not going to save everybody. No miracles,
right?
I don't fully understand miracles by their definition are meaningless.
Yeah,
yeah. That feels like I think that's in the book. I feel like that's a.
I don't know. Maybe it is. It's been a little while. I'm afraid to. Cause I'm worried I'm going to go back and it's going to be my Ozymandias phase. But I this totally gave me the urge to read it again because it has been a while, good. And I'll go back and check to see if it's in there, because that seems like a thing that kind of is meant to be deep or meaningful, but doesn't really, like, if you poke too hard at it just deflates.
Yeah.
Well, in that way it's meta too.
Yeah, there you go. this sentence about miracles by definition is meaningless.
Well, I did have to put in miracle in Google and ask for its definition. And in the first of the three options it gives, I think the part in it that relates to meaningless is when what it says is surprising and welcoming event that is not explicable by natural or scientific laws. And that not explicable part is maybe kind of what, in some translations or whatever, maybe that's becoming this meaningless thing that he's saying.
So he should have followed it. Like, miracles by their definition are meaningless. Well, sounds better in Martian. You know.
Something's lost in the Martian translation.
Yeah.
You should hear it in its original Klingon. Yeah, it could be one of those things that he might have said. If the line is in the book, it could have been said, you know, three chapters ago. And I have noticed that in some instances, the dialogue, they'll pull something from
right
a completely different section just to and work it into a scene. Yeah, that'll That's, be something you know, I have to track that down.
I'm saying this three chapters ago.
There you go.
The very John thing.
Yeah. I like the dig here at society about like calling us out for the so-called need for things like oil and malls with his question about would it be improved by a oil pipeline and the shopping mall. And
that's a thing that I did notice from, I went back to kind of thumb through the book looking for this part. And I noticed that in the book, he just says, would that be improved by an oil pipeline?
Yeah.
And so then they added in a shopping mall to make it more just kind of, hey man, we're poking holes in modern society in general, not just specifically. Which is that shopping malls were they're more on the decline now, I guess, than they in 85, 86, they were totally.
Oh my gosh.
They were still the height of everything.
Sure.
So maybe now it's an easier target.
Mm.
Tough to say. But yeah. If there were a shopping mall on Mars, I would love to go there.
I'm just trying to picture that. What would be? Is that what was? If I'm thinking of Futurama, doesn't Amy? Don't her parents have like a something on Mars? It was like a casino or.
Yeah, well, they live there. They have a big estate there, but then I think they also, yeah, they have all kinds. Well, Mars is, you know, Mars U. There's a whole, there's all kinds of stuff there.
Gotcha.
It's a well-developed planet.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Although, again, everything is overrated and meaningless.
When he starts talking, well, even the line, the miracles by their definition are meaningless. And then his next line where he like exasperated, is that a word? Exasperation? I don't know. He gets out the line, only what can happen does happen. And it just sounds like he's just so tired or that's the two lines, I guess, that, like you were saying yesterday about the vocal performance kind of feeling a little, you know, not quite hitting the target. And I definitely feel like that only what can happen does happen line is just really weird for me.
Yeah.
Well, to me, what it indicated was the idea of alternate realities.
Oh? Oh, I mean, you know, the line specifically? I was just talking about the... Okay. Performance.
Oh, yeah, the delivery. Yeah. Sure.
But what do you... Yeah, go into that.
So then I was curious. I mean, we certainly brought it up at various points, but Pete the Retailer, are you familiar with? Are you possibly reading the current comic Doomsday Clock, you know, and or knowledgeable of it being kind of a Watchmen DC, rest of DC Universe, multiverse, really, crossover?
No, I haven't read any of the... Watchmen Expanded Universe stuff that they not that there are sides necessarily, but I get what Alan Moore is saying, and I think it's best left alone as a single.
Oh yeah, yeah, I can understand that
as a single cell, but much like my not entirely. I don't know. Do I? How firmly do I believe that Star Wars would be better off if there were no sequels and it was just Star Wars?
Yeah.
And no
special editions.
One movie, that's it. They did one movie, they did the holiday special. Everybody was like, oh God, that's terrible. Like, shut it down. Shut it all down.
Shut them all down.
I haven't checked out any of the ancillary Watchmen stuff, the follow-up stuff. But is this a... Does it tie in through this?
Yeah, it's like a current ongoing mini 12-issue series that they're...
Well, it's basically somewhat taking, I mean, we don't really know for sure yet in it, but there are the lines at the end of this book and movie that, you know, where he says something along the lines of, help me if I have it wrong here. I think I'll go create something of my own or something like that.
Yeah.
That
right? About.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That he thinks he'll go create some life, you know?
Yeah.
And then.
So if that's really what's happened for, and that's what our reality is, or who knows, but because we're only in like halfway through it right now. Yeah.
I think they're hinting, I think, and I haven't read any of Doomsday Clock mm-hmm. since issue 3. I think what they're hinting at is that Dr. Manhattan, when he left New York in 1985, he went and created the DC Universe, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what they're going to try to establish.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it seems like it's all leading up to Dr. Manhattan versus Superman. So,
mm-hmm. Right.
So we'll see.
Did they? No, they didn't. I was like, did they do like a on the Justice League cartoon on the like Justice League Unlimited or something? Didn't they do a like a pseudo Watchmen? But I don't think they did. I know they did a pseudo Defenders, and they did some stuff with the Question acting essentially as Rorschach. But I don't think they ever did like. You know, doing stuff with the characters that the Watchmen characters originally
sure, like based Captain on. Atom and a Blue Beetle and a Question. That'd be fun. Yeah, I don't know
if they strung them all together like that, but I know they definitely lean on. You know, they just wrote the Question as Rorschach,
right,
the whole time.
Huh.
So we didn't get to Dr. Manhattan Superman per se.
Yeah. Yeah. there's something great in this minute how frustrated she gets, you know, especially with that line about only what can happen does happen, and she's already saying like, you know, oh God, John, and then he says that and she's like, you know, just stop with the bullshit, and that I like how she responds to him. I like how it's she's tired of it, you know. It's even with some of the stuff in yesterday's minute, with being told stuff about universe not noticing, and like, I like how it just all builds up with her, and she's kind of had enough of it. And...
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very human reaction.
Yeah.
Not to sound distant and detached, but it's a very totally...
Yeah.
You know, like, imagine a couple having a fight, like, in a parking lot, except it's on this weird cosmic scale.
Yeah. yeah, I suppose, not, yeah, you know, yeah.
He's not playing his... He's reading his lines wrong.
He's not. But he does say, as you wish.
Mm. Right.
Which, does that really mean I love you?
There you go. Deep down inside, it does.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the absolute hubris on Laurie's part of basically saying, like, oh, you were wrong about this ending with me in tears. That's like, that's the most, like, asking to be destroyed, like, asking to be hurt emotionally. Like, that's so.
Yeah.
And the way it's set up is so good that it's, you know it's coming, kind of, but then you don't know what, and then it's a good.
Yeah. I took a lot of issue earlier in the movie with the him telling her what she was going to be doing, that kind of stuff, and telling her future or kind of deciding what she'll do in a way, and I get the sense that it's must have been a theme running throughout their relationship, you know, especially last minute when he says that it ends with you in tears. And it wasn't like in a threatening or controlling way, but it was just that casual telling of her future. But I did like the, yeah.
And not to give anything away too much here in a minute or two or so, I believe. But, you know, you said this ending with me in tears is should be the kind of thing she should have said right before he would beam her away, transport her away. You know, you don't leave it when there's still a chance that it could happen.
Right.
Right.
Why say that?
Yeah.
Well, if you care, if you're... That's the whole thing. And he's just like, no, that's just the way it works. Nothing he could do. Well, I was going to say nothing he could do could change it, but then he could. But then maybe he couldn't. I don't know. Like, oh, boy.
Like he established that, you know, he is, you know, reacting as it's been preordained or, you know.
Right.
So, I don't know. It hits me again, kind of seeing, you know, this as the clock sinks into Mars. I won't go into too much detail since I've already talked about it a lot about how boring I think the color palette is here. But just something like this should be more of a spectacle. And I think in this minute, it occurred to me that they could have had like his blue, you know, glow causing like some sort of
that you said glow
that too I think they could have had like reflections and prisms of light, kind of like, you know, like when you have a diamond with the light kind of shining through it. They could have kind of used some of that to light up this whole place, because it's, you know, he should be casting a lot of light, I would think, but, you know, in these wide shots where you see this clock, you know, floating around, is you can't even get an idea of where he is physically on this, I don't know, ship. But you would think that there would be like some sort of, like, I don't know, pulsating or just light prism kind of displaying where he is in relation to this place, but yeah, it's just more brown on brown, and I don't know, just it really, and now I'm starting to get it back into it, but the book version of Mars is just pops so much better. I think they should have at least used some of his color in this palace, just to, because it is crystal and it would have had all that light going through it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this is such a, you know, it's a cliche with movies these days, orange and teal, but this is the perfect place for it, because you get a teal man on an orange planet.
Yeah.
Like, it's the reverse of what normally happens, mm-hmm. but maybe it's, because the color originally was a little more washed out. You know, they just redid the color not too long ago in the book. And so maybe it was more kind of like going for that, but I don't know. It's still like with the way that I get what you're saying, like the way that they have it set up here, the way that the effects are, you know, it does, I can say that it leaves something to be desired, but it's like a, like it should be more red than brown.
And right.
It's just kind of like brown and just kind of gets... looks like basically that kind of desaturated nothing that a lot of movies are these days. When it should, it should really just be kind of, you know, Mars, like red Mars. And maybe they were trying to go with a more scientifically accurate Mars. Maybe we're like looking at, you know, actual photos coming back from rovers or something, but still, like, you know, you have a conversation going on Mars. Yeah. You have some leeway.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're already a sci-fi movie essentially at this point. So, you know.
About like a movie, and obviously now several years later, like what year did The Martian come out? 2015 maybe? Like,
yeah, probably.
In those, you know, scenes with the Martian landscape, it didn't feel like they were taking too many liberties, you know.
Yeah,
but it's so much of a brighter landscape and more visually interesting, and they still kind of kept it in the same color palette of reds and browns and everything, but it just popped so much more. Whereas here, yeah, like you said, they used too much brown versus instead of red, but yeah.
Maybe that's it. Maybe they did. Maybe they tinted it kind of, you know, they leveled it a little bit orange, more orange, and it came out brown to try to go for that orange and teal thing to make it pop more, but it ended up basically just washing out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it ends up looking like bronze or something behind it.
Yeah. And it never really occurred to me watching it before doing this show, like how boring I find the visuals on Mars.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I get it, because that's, you know, me going back to the you know, this being some of my favorite parts of the book and wanting this kind of, like, amazing, you know, this science fiction, just kind of, you know, complete extraterrestrial fantasy thing. And it is a little, leaves a little to be desired here.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks kind of cool, but it doesn't take me there quite as much.
Sure.
Now I do find, I don't know, the clock ship itself, when they're on it for more the rather first half of the minute when it's moving as well. You know, I'm even stopped on the second 33, and you know, there's part of the ship where it's a clear glass, mm-hmm. and then the other half looks like it's very gold.
Mm.
And yeah. But then also I really like, I just enjoy the movement of it, and it's this minute too where I noted I heard it the most. It just seemed to be the most pronounced, the movement of the sound of the movement.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't really talked about that much. Yeah, that I do like that too. I like the perpetual movement of it, mm-hmm. that nature.
And then the only other weird thing, like I was saying, the second 33, and it's right before it. So if you start at 30 and watch those 3 seconds, it's right when she says, "Just stop," and a little puff of her hair shoots out.
Yep.
And she continues, and you're bullshit. There isn't a movement that they're making like the old Star Trek show, or anything like the ship did stop, you know, on a dime or anything like that.
Yeah.
But is that what they were going for with that little movement of her hair? It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
And it's him being confused. And the idea would be is that it's Dr. Manhattan getting confused by her saying "just stop" and not listening to the rest of sentence. You know, assuming that's all she had to say.
I noticed her hair. Getting that sudden gust of wind. And I thought that it did stand out. But then I scrolled back. It might have been earlier in this minute. It might have been yesterday. That there are a couple other moments where her hair is blowing around a little bit. So at first I thought this was a unique, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Out of the blue, but they do.
It's not.
So there is some wind. I mean, obviously there's, you know, there's some wind and stuff.
Is there wind on Mars?
I think so. Yeah. I think they have some dust storms and everything. So, but yeah, it does oddly just stand out, 'cause her hair suddenly like really goes for it.
So she's in the, I'm trying to, I guess, is there a, do they do an atmosphere around her specifically here? I forgot how they did it in the movie part, because I missed that. It's before my minutes.
But sure.
Does he just do a little atmosphere around her, or does he fill up the whole ship with air? What?
Visually, they show him touching the back of her head, and then like a blue oxygen bubble kind of forms around both of them, and then the blue fades away, and so it's like showing us that they're in a bubble, and then it like turns into an invisible bubble, sort of
and
thing.
It's like, well, we don't want to have to render this for the whole
I think idea is that bubble is constantly with them, and then we'll see it kind of show back up, I think next week.
Right.
So.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Let's see. Any other thoughts on the minute?
No. That's pretty much it for that.
Cool. Yeah, I'm good.
Pete, why don't you tell us a little? I mean, we've obviously talked about, you know, you might have read the book once or twice, but can you remember, like, maybe the first time or?
Yeah, I was a dedicated Marvel zombie kid growing up, so I didn't really, like, you know, when this came out, I was aware of it. I saw some of the, you know, some of my opposite number to my, you know, the DC kids were totally like, oh man, you don't understand. So when at the time it came out, I just was aware of its existence, but never got into it until I started working at Forbidden Planet here in New York when I was 19. Mm. And my coworker, you know, my immediate supervisor, the kind of junior manager or whatever, we were talking, and he's like, I think he was wearing a Rorschach shirt. We were talking about it. I was like, yeah, I never read that because I was a Marvel kid. He's like, oh my God, you have to read it now. Hmm. And I did, and he was right. So thanks, Mike. Yeah. And then, yeah, every couple of years, I'll read it again. And, you know, it's got that, like I said, it transforms. And I'm always amazed by new things every time I read it.
But sure.
Not only just kind of in the technique and noticing new, like, it's the perfect synthesis of you know, the usage of the comic book form is so amazing. Like the things that happen within it and the way that they use visuals, like, obviously a lot of the credit goes to Alan Moore, but so much of Dave Gibbons is in this too, that he does like an amazing job. Kind of,
yeah,
like using visual themes and kind of matching things that, you know, upon multiple readings, then all of a sudden it's just like, oh wait, that looks like this, which is in, you know, the everything down to the way it's like kind of a mirror. The whole thing is like a mirror. There's so many things to unpack with it that it's fantastic. One of my all-time favorite books. But yeah, and that's, you know, I'm a big fan of Alan Moore in general, but this was an amazing work of art, and I do go back to it every once in a while. And I think, you know, for years before, now the world is catching up to me, but for years, once, because, you know, Warner Brothers has owned DC forever, I was like, look, they own this, they own that, why don't they just make an HBO miniseries?
Right.
You could do one episode for each chapter of the book, and you could just do it, you know, tell this, let each story breathe. And everybody was like, I don't know if and now it seems like that's what they're doing, so we'll see. But it was certainly exciting to see the movie and to see this, you know, a lot of these super familiar characters and situations, you know, up on the big screen.
Yeah. Did you see it opening weekend sort of thing, or eventually?
I'm pretty sure. I know, you know, this is, what year is this? You said 2005?
Nine.
2009. Okay. So probably, maybe not opening weekend. I got pretty, I don't know, I started to sour on opening weekends after a while. I started to get too old and realized it wasn't.
Too old.
Yeah. But,
I'm not apologizing.
So probably not opening night, but maybe opening week, like Saturday afternoon or something like that.
Sure.
You know, before I had kids, I could do something like that. And I, you know, definitely within the first, you know, couple of days, within the first week, definitely went out to check it out. And I think I probably went with Adam.
Yeah.
L. Adam. Mm-hmm. Because he's, you know, from the comic book crew, the Forbidden Planet guys, you know, we were all kind of keeping an eye on that. It's so hard. It's, to a certain extent, I'll say it's like a Star Wars sequel, that, you know, it's so hard to live up to expectations.
Sure.
With this, that you just have to, like, there's so many And there's so many things that are just unique to the comics form that happen in the book that it's, you know, you have to either replace them with something or do it different. I'm glad that they, not to jump to the end, not to spoil, I'm not going to spoil it for everybody, don't worry, but I like the way that that was handled plot-wise. Like, I like the way that they kind of, you know, curved it a little bit, and that's fine. And but some of the things that I really wanted to be in there and be awesome were fine. But it's just, again, it was never, I can't think of anything, any way that it would have lived up to my expectations.
Sure. So. Yeah, I can understand that. All right. I think that's going to do it for today. Can you make it back one more episode?
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. We got to, I feel like there's a flashback in my future, so. I mean, I can see that there's a flashback in my future. And right now, I'm talking about that flashback to you guys tomorrow.
Right, right. Well, maybe Eric and I will join you there here in a minute. But, I guess we should hit some plugs. You can find us pretty much everywhere at Watchmen Minute, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah, and definitely check out our group on Facebook called the Crime Busters Listener Society.
Pete, where can they find you all over the social medias?
I'm Pete the Retailer on Twitter. I don't know. Maybe I should change my Instagram to be Pete the Retailer too, but it's not. But PeteTheRetailer.com, I think, links to all my things. Like, I've been trying to get better at updating that, so. Whenever I do a new show or whatever, I try to throw it up there. So you'll hear it there first. No, you'll hear it there well after it's out. So, but it's a good place.
Very cool. Then, I think let's, end here, come back tomorrow and, see how this, conversation with Lori and John continues. But until then, who watches The Watchmen?
We do.
Watchmen are over. Drink my wine. Come and dance.